to Racewalk Planet Radio. Welcome to Racewalk Planet Radio. We have a great show for you today. We have Olympian Miranda Melville. She started out as a junior race walker and progressed up the ranks to become a USA national team member and all the way to being an Olympian. She's been a friend of Racewalk Planet Radio for many, many years, and she recently competed in the National 35-kilometer Racewalk Championships, winning the race in a new American record time of 3 hours and 18 seconds. She almost broke 3 hours. So agonizingly close. And so we want to thank her for being on the show today. Thank you for tuning in to Racewalk Planet Radio, and on with the show! As I said in the introduction, Miranda has had a very long and a very successful career, and we want to tell her story. So here we go. Welcome to the show, Miranda.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, let's talk about your career. So you've been a race walker for a long time. A lot of people know who you are, but I also kind of want to go over your career because there's might be some people who are new to the sport and to the event, who don't know who you are and who don't know your story. I mean, they see your name and the results and that kind of thing. But every athlete has a story to tell, and you have a very successful story to tell. So let's get into this. So tell us about how you, first of all, got started in race walking.
Yeah, so I started race walking when I was in high school. It's a 1,500-meter distance in New York State for girls to, you know, try for indoor track. I was already kind of just trying different events in when I was a freshman. And so my coach had me try the race walk, and I was not good at it, very slow, but I liked it, and I didn't mind doing it. And so it just kind of progressed from there over the years. You know, it brought me into my college career and then my post-collegiate career as an athlete. And it brought me to being an Olympian and a lot of successful races and time.
And, you know, that's a similar story that I hear from race walkers all the time. They started out, their high school coach suggests, you know, or puts them into the race walks just to see how well they do. And they end up finding that they're a natural at it and they have an ability to do it. And they continue on because of that success. And it sounds like that's exactly what happened to you.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you have a lot of really great women who had that kind of beginning. And it shows how great having that introduction at a young age to this event in track and field can be, and how much we could really, the potential for growing the sport, you know. We don't have a ton of depth for race walkers in the U.S., but I think, you know, if we were able to implement it at a younger age and especially have a collegiate plan for these kids, future walkers.
So based on that conversation, I look at Maria, and she continued to race at a elite level, but then she went to school and became a doctor. Then I look at Stephanie Casey. Stephanie Casey went to school, and she took a little bit of time off her race walking, but she became a doctor, and she also had a family and 4 kids, you know, and still, I look at her performance on Sunday. She did very well, and all of that. How did you make your decision to continue to race walk? And it's not fair to make comparisons to those two athletes or any particular athlete. Are you pursuing your education, or what else are you doing besides race walking?
So I work as a academic and test prep tutor for ACT, SAT prep, ISEE or SSAT, which are the two exams people can take to get into kind of like private high schools. And so I work in that kind of industry. So I do work somewhere, I mean, depending on where we are in the time of year, probably in the fall, I work a little bit more than I do in the racing season, but I usually work about 20 or 30 hours a week. I love working with my students. I enjoy it. I've been doing this for a long time. I've also dabbled in behavioral therapy with kids with autism. I've worked with kids with learning disabilities. So I'm definitely trying to provide and support for myself. Luckily, you know, I've had great support from the New York Athletic Club, and I've had the Greater Rochester Athletic Amateur Federation help me out at times too. U.S. Race Walking has supported, like, when I needed to go overseas and try to hit a fast time, you know. So there's definitely different outlets of support out there financially, but I mean, I am mostly working and trying to, you know, make it work on my own. And it's not easy, and it's exhausting, and I know, you know, I give a lot of credit to Stephanie and Maria, you know, the way they handle, you know, just their lives and how amazing athletes they are, the terrific attitudes they always have, the positivity they bring to the table. You know, Stephanie really did crush it on this past weekend. You know, she was like pretty much negative splitting the whole way, picking off people. She started off very smart and conservative. You know, she did amazing, you know, and I don't want her, I don't want her result to be overshadowed necessarily by mine, because she did a phenomenal job. And Maria is just, you know, Maria and I are becoming, you know, longtime friends here. We've been competing with each other for so long, and, you know, we talk to each other a lot, and I think we've both been able to see each other grow as people, and I've been honored to watch Maria grow not only as an athlete, but as, you know, a PhD student, as a PA, as a mom, as a wife, as a sister. You know, it's really amazing to watch her, and it's inspiring for both of them, you know, to be doing so great. So, you know, yeah, you can't really compare our lifestyles necessarily all the way, but we all are working. We all are, you know, trying to just make our ends meet and make our lives, you know, as comfortable as we can so that we can pursue these dreams.
Great answer. And I would say that I think that's the dilemma for every elite athlete in any sport that you want to talk about. How do you support yourself while you're trying to train full-time at an elite level? Because it's not, you know, it's not the same as just being a weekend runner or something like that. To be able to make a USA national team or to make the Olympics like you did requires a lot of training and also the rest that's required too, you know. So I'm sure, like I said, it's not just race walking, it's not just track and field, it's all disciplines of sport to be able to find that way of supporting yourself as well as finding a way to train.
Absolutely, absolutely, I completely agree, and it's just finding a life balance for everybody, you know. If you can, you know, it's not always easy just to balance. You know, you want to have your personal time. You need recovery. You need to make sure you're eating enough, but you know, on top of it, you have to support yourself or other people, and that's, you know, you just got to find that, strike that balance. And of course, things become a little unbalanced here and there, but, you know, ideally, you know, you want to keep it somewhat equal throughout.
Exactly. You have to find that balance. And sometimes through your career, everybody's career is you do find that balance, and other times you don't. You just have to, you know, you're working, you got to work, you know, you got to support yourself. And those are the tough times, and those are the lean times. And then you question, you know, is this all worth it? But you have continued on, and you've, like I said, you've been around for such a long time. How many years have you been race walking?
So I guess I would have started when I was like end of being 14, almost 15, and I hate to say it, but I'm 32 now. So we're getting close to 20 years, and it's in March I'll be 33. So we're really, it's almost like 18 years. You know, it's crazy how long it's been, and you know how this has taken up more than half my life.
There's something about it that it just gets in your blood, and you love it, and that's what you want to do, and you find that you're good at it, and it's like anything, being an artist, being a musician, being a dancer. You love what you do, and you may not, you know, be world class or something like that, but it's something that you love to do, and that's why I give a lot of kudos to people who go out there every single day, and they go out and exercise, and they run, or they're dancers, they go dance, or they're cyclists, they go out and cycle. They're getting out. They're doing what they love.
Oh yeah, 100%. I completely agree with that. If anybody out there, as long as you know, if whatever fills your heart with joy, whatever passion you have, it's worth pursuing. Because yeah, life is, you know, honestly, life is short, and you might as well enjoy it while you can.
Exactly. Well, in your case though, so 18 years. That's a lot of time. And you've had your ups and downs, mostly ups. So let's talk about the ups. So we know that, well, you're an Olympian. You made the Olympics. Tell us about how you felt when you made the Olympics. Because, as I said, I want to tell your complete story. The 2012 trials, you were only 3 seconds off of making the team. And I was there in the stadium that day. And I remember those last few laps when you were chasing Maria. And everybody thought you were going to catch her. And I was videotaping it. And it was amazing to see the effort on your face. And just how much you were catching her. The question was, is it going to happen? So tell us about that race, and then tell us about actually making the team in 2016.
Yeah, so 2012, I was 1 year out of graduating from college. I moved out to California to be coached by Tim Seaman, and I was young and 22 and had no idea what I was getting myself into. I took a leap, and I thought, you know, why not give it my all this year and just see what I can do in a year? And you know, a phenomenal thing happened. You know, I didn't go into that race knowing exactly how fast I would walk. I just knew that I was going to go a certain pace through about 8 or 10K, and then I was going to pick it up, and hopefully, because we were on the track for that race at Hayward Field, I was going to hunt down the lead pack of girls. And so the lead pack at the time, I believe, was like Teresa Vail, Erin Gray, and Maria. And so I was like, I'm going to go after them. And that's pretty much exactly what I did. After around 8 or 10K, I started picking it up. I started just kind of, I think they were about 300 meters in front of me, and I just started clicking away each lap at trying to catch them until I did. And then it kind of like became in the last couple K, just down to the, you know, myself, Erin Gray, and Maria. And then we started losing Erin a little bit, and it just came down to Maria and I. And, you know, it was just in that last final, like 200 meters, 100 meters, somewhere in there, Maria just had a little extra kick than I did. And she was able to, you know, kick it into making the Olympic team. But, you know, that day I still PR'd, I think my previous PR before that day was 137, maybe 137.08 or something like that. And I PR'd that day by, to 134.57, you know, it was huge. So it was a very bittersweet moment because I didn't make the Olympic team. But it was exciting because Maria did make the team, and it was exciting because of how much I improved that year overall. It was great in a lot of ways, and it was pretty heartaching in a lot of other ways, but it was quite the race. And to be so close, to be that 3 seconds or just under 3 seconds of making the team, that will surely light a fire underneath you for 4 years. You have no problem feeling motivated for 4 years that you're going to make the next one. So I think, you know, fast forward to 2016, I had the standard. Maria and I had the standard. We knew we just had to finish the race. And we already had great seasons kind of leading in. I had a huge PR and walked 131.42, which is my current PB in the 20K. Maria tied her American record already again that year. We were just really strong and really great shape. And, you know, it was just phenomenal, you know, to go to Olympic trials, just race whatever I had to do, came through and was just like, this is it. You did it. You're going. Like, you put your head down, you grinded. This is it. And I was just nothing but happiness that day and joy, like just beyond elation, any type of elation. And you just wanted to live on that kind of like cloud nine for a while.
So tell us about your Olympic experience.
You know, it's so funny because I, you know, people during that time really wanted to give Rio de Janeiro kind of a hard time. And I thought it was amazing. I didn't have any issues.
Right.
I loved it. You know, I got to see other events and watch other and get tickets. You know, they gave you tickets. I got to stay in the village. The most exciting thing was walking in the opening ceremonies. And the best part was I magically got seen on TV. So all my friends and family at home got to see me. You know, and that was just, it was just magical. You know, it's something you can't really always put into words. You know, you watch it on TV and you see all those people kind of walking in and excited. And, you know, to be that person that's actually walking in, it's just a dream come true. And I really thought, you know, Rio was beautiful. I think Marie and I raced pretty strongly. And, you know, we got to enjoy a lot of things in the village and that had to do with the Olympic experience of being there and just kind of seeing people we've seen over the years, right? Like you're staying in the village, you're seeing all your international competitive friends in the dining hall again, and you're able to just kind of have that camaraderie again and just like hang out. And even though you all have the same goal, you're all getting on the line, you're going to fight, you're just enjoying it. You're all there pretty proud of yourself and just in good moods.
Oh, no doubt. So before we leave those two races, I just want to make a comment that, I think I even mentioned this to Tim somewhere after you made the Olympic team. I noticed that you looked more fit than I've ever seen you before, because I've known you for a long time and I've seen your progression. But in that time period, you looked amazing. Your form looked amazing, and your body type even looked like it changed. Is that what happened, or?
I mean, I'm sure my body composition, you know, there definitely, I can look at pictures and say, like, yeah, body composition changed. And I would say that's true. You know, we incorporated lifting a lot more in after 2012, especially lifting like more heavier weights, like strength component really changed. And then, you know, I altered, you know, my diet. I was playing with my diet a little bit, so, you know, what was going to make me feel good and help my body. What does my body process better? What does it not process well? I think those things were made. And I think, honestly, too, like, not to, like, say anything else, but you just were genuinely happy. You know, when you're genuinely happy, you have less cortisol. You know, it's like, it's just kind of like a trade-off there that helps your body composition a bit. But, you know, I've seen myself not at a great weight and walk some really stellar times, and I've seen myself at a great weight and also walk stellar times. So I think, you know, the body composition it's definitely helpful, but it's not the only component.
Well, it certainly helped. And as I said, just visually, you looked so fit in that time period. And so bringing it forward to this past Olympics and Olympic trials, you still looked fit and everything, but tell us about what happened at the last Olympic trials and the last Olympics.
You know, I think I didn't have a great 2019. This last Olympics, we had to qualify through a point system. I didn't have a great 2019 to kind of carry me into the Olympic year, so that was kind of a bummer. So, and then I had very limited races to perform then. I think I had two races to, like, rough bust and be ready to go to Olympic trials. And I think, you know, another major component that changed my life is I'm with a new coach. I'm with Terrence Maha now. He's a running coach, really awesome. Really enjoying working with him. And, you know, there's you have to adapt to a new coach's training philosophy. And so my adaptability was still kind of happening. And so I think when you take a lot of components of COVID and not having a great 2019 and switching new coaching and, you know, just life, you know, just life things that are happening around you that are out of your control and kind of trying to balance it all on such a monumental moment of Olympic trials, you know, it didn't come together the way I had hoped. And it was disappointing, you know, and I think it stung me more than I wanted to admit it was going to. I definitely spent, you know, I'm not going to lie here, I'm not going to sugarcoat this. I spent the whole week after I got home from Olympic trials, I don't think I left my apartment for 5 days. I just was at home watching, having food, groceries delivered, and just, I watched all of the Star Wars. I needed a moment to really grieve. And then after that, after about a week, I went on a hike with, you know, Emmanuel Corvera and Selena Lefe, also race walkers who I train with out here in San Diego. And I felt like 1,000 times better. I just needed that time to grieve. I needed to process it because I am not great at grieving right away or be like settling down with my emotions right away. I tend to want to suppress it and go on to the next thing. And I've learned over the years that that's not healthy. And I need to deal with things at the time so that I can be a healthier version of myself in the future. And so I really just kind of let myself after that. But ultimately, you know, it was disappointing. It was hard. But I still look back at that and think, like, you know, 3 Olympic trials, one of them I've made the Olympic team so far. And all 3 of them, I've been on the podium. Not a lot of people can say that. Not a lot of people can say that they've qualified for 3 Olympic trials, that they've made a podium 3 times, or even made an Olympic team. So there are a lot of positives to take from it. I am proud of myself for not giving up through COVID and through all those changes and kind of hurdles in my way, you know, because it would have been easy to just kind of leave it all behind. But I don't know. I just, like I said, I love this, and it's a passion, and it's hard to walk away from it at times because I think no matter whether I'm an elite athlete or not, I'm always going to want to work out and be healthy, and I really just enjoy this event and sport, so I want to hang on to it while I can.
Well, thank you for being honest and for sharing your personal life and your personal feelings about that race with our audience. That's a very brave thing to do. And I think it's also healthy to, it's kind of like giving permission to everybody who hears this podcast and your story to do the same. Give yourself permission, you know, because not every race is going to be the way that you wanted it to be, and not everything's going to turn out the way that you want it to be, or as you had planned, or even as you had trained. And sometimes things happen, and yeah, you grieve, you're upset, you're angry, you feel a range of emotions when races don't go the way that you think that they should have gone, even though you trained and everything. So I think you're actually speaking the emotions that all of us have felt when we've had those types of races. So thank you for being honest enough to share that.
Oh, yeah. Anybody ever wants to reach out with questions about any of this stuff, I'm always happy to share experiences and help with any of that, because it's so easy for us to kind of go on an autopilot, you know, in this day and age, and just be like, I have to do this, I have to do that, you know, what's next? But really, like, being present in a moment is far better for you in the end than, you know, being on this autopilot. So I definitely encourage anybody out there that can just work on being present to do it, because it'll change your life.
Well, I agree. It'll change your life in a good way. Now, before we move on, you did mention something that's very exciting. you mentioned that you have a new coach, Terrence Mahan. And if people don't know who Terrence Mahan is, he is a world-renowned coach. Everybody in the running world knows who he is. Maybe not everybody in the race walk world knows who he is. But Terrence Mahan was a very good runner himself. But then once he became a coach, he coached, and I suppose he's still coaching runners, he has coached a lot of runners to major championships and elite performances. So how did you two hook up?
Oh, yeah. So Terrence is based here in San Diego now. He's been based kind of all over the U.S. at different points or even over in Europe at times, but he's based in San Diego now. And I go to a place for my strength trainer and to get, like, athletic massage and ART and stuff like that called Kinetic Performance. And so a good friend of mine, Jonathan Pierce, owns and work and runs Kinetic Performance. And over the years, you know, I've seen Terrence come in with his runners and knew who he was. And I think we were even at one point, he was one of the people that worked on Team USA, I think when I was in 2015 in Beijing, he was there. So I've seen him over the years. I've known about him. And when I had to start looking for a new coach, I went to Jonathan Pierce and said, you know, what do you think? What do you think I should do? And he said, well, what do you think about talking to Terrence? And I was like, oh, I don't know. He's not, you know, he's not a race walk coach, but he is a really well-known distance coach. And, you know, we talking it over with Jonathan and I, it was just kind of like, well, how much technique work do I necessarily need? Like, I know how to race walk. I just need distance, you know, stuff. And, you know, joke's on me is that Terrence is this great biomechanist, right? Like, he loves to solve a puzzle. Like, if you're leaning to the left too much, you're going to figure out why, and you're going to work on that, you know? So joke's on me, like, he's always helping my technique, even though he's not, you know, as familiar with race walking when I first went to him. He's still always watching how my body moves and what we can do to help it so that I stay healthy and efficient and successful. So, you know, I just ended up approaching Terrence, asking if he would take me on and be willing to work with a race walker. And I've been very fortunate enough that he was willing to. And it's been a great joy, you know, working with him and the Golden Coast Track Club that he's a part of and being on the track with a lot of his runners and just keeping a very positive spirit. Like, it's been great. So I'm happy with this choice that I made. And I honestly, like, going to him over COVID, it kind of re-energized my, like, passion for race walking. You know, we were doing different workouts than I'd ever done before, taking things from a different approach. And again, there was that I had to adapt to it, the adaptation to it. But I enjoy it. And it's given me a lot of ideas of even things that I would do when I do retire. What kind of workouts would I want to do? You know, I can kind of pull from this experience and be like, I'm going to do the workouts that I really like, you know, and it's been great.
Well, let's talk about your race on Sunday last weekend. So was that really your first 35K?
That was my first 35K. I've done one marathon race walking. I did the Rock and Roll Phoenix Marathon when I was like 21, and that was it. That was the longest I'd ever gone before that. And so it was, you know, coming off an Olympic year, right, where it didn't go well. I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And so we started off by just having me kind of run a little more through the month of August and just enjoy some running and doing some hill repeats to help strengthen my hips a little. And then, you know, I had to start looking at races and what I wanted to do. And I mentioned to Terrence that, hey, they're doing a 35K now. And I wasn't really sure if I should do it. And so, you know, he let me think about it. And around, like, towards the end of September, I had to kind of, like, make my decision. Like, am I going to go for this or not? And so I decided, hey, you know, let's try it. And if at any point I don't like the training or I'm not enjoying this, then we're not going to do it. Like, it was that simple. You know, it was early enough in the season that we could change directions if we needed to. So, you know, through the fall, I really liked the training. I was like, oh, this is great. This is stuff I can do. I feel, you know, like it's a different mindset than it was the 20K a bit, just because it is longer, so paces are a little bit different. And it just kind of took me away from the 20K. You know, I think I was a little brokenhearted from the 20K, and I needed to take a little break from it. And so going to 35 kind of gave me that reprieve. And so, you know, we put in a really nice fall together, and, you know, put in some nice long walks, some really excellent long walks, really. And then, you know, boom, before I knew it, it was January and I had to race. And, yeah, it just, you know, that was my, it was my debut one. It was my first one. I was not sure, you know, how it was going to go. I was just going to do my best. And whatever that was, you know, you got to get the first one out there so that you can learn from it, right? And luckily my first one went pretty well. And there's still a lot for me to nitpick at for sure and do better with. But this is a good starting point for, you know, in my mind.
Well, in case our audience doesn't know, you actually broke the American record, Katie Burnett's American record, in your first attempt at 35 kilometers. How do you feel about that?
You know, what's amazing to me is that Katie walked that 35K record in a 50K, which means when she finished, she still did 15 more K. And I'm like, man, how'd she do that? Crazy. But, you know, I think it felt good. I was definitely a little disappointed at myself that I didn't break 3 hours. I, you know, again, I'm going to be nitpicky. That's how I've like gotten to this level and succeeded in so many ways. I know how to just kind of pick apart at things that, and create new goals almost immediately. But you know, it, coming through the line, I could tell, you know, that I was crashing in my last 5K and I was just so happy to be done. And you know, it was, it's, you know, I ended up crying like, you know, pretty soon after I came through the line. And luckily my very good dear friend Molly, who got married the day before the race, and I was actually in the wedding the day before here in San Diego, she came to the race and she was happened to just be right there, and I just started crying in her arms, and there's so many pictures of it. And I think, like, you know you have such like emotional overwhelming moment when you've been so heartbroken from the sport and now you're having this great joy. And so, like, because there's just so many emotions coming to one, I could not help but cry after I crossed the line.
Well, again, that's just showing your humanity. Your emotions came out after such a great race. Your body and your emotional self knew that you had given it a good race. You had put out a good race, and it just all came pouring out, and that's okay. We're human, and I'm sure they were tears of joy.
Yeah, they were definitely tears of joy, 100%.
And congratulations to Molly Josephs on getting married the day before the race. Did she race?
Molly has retired from race walking, but it meant so much that she was able, her and her husband Caleb came out to the race. I saw them on the sidelines, and it was kind of like a, oh my gosh, and it kind of like, you know, energized me a little bit, being like, yay, they're here. It was very heartwarming to see them there the next day. I deeply appreciate them coming to cheer.
Okay, so I was looking at the, they broke down the race by per lap, and you had, I think, I counted like 11 laps that were all the same pace, or they were within 1 second of each other. I mean, you were like super consistent for like 10 laps there. Tell us about that part.
So, yeah, I mean, I went out pretty conservative, and I was, you know, I think I had, you know, a little group the first lap, then the second or third lap, I had Robin Stevens and Dan there, and then they kind of picked it up a little faster than I was looking to pick it up right away, or to, like, that early, so I didn't really go with them. So pretty much I walked most of my race by myself, just walk, you know, like, you know, from after those first 3 or 4 laps, I was by myself pretty much the rest of the race until the second to last lap. I happened to be lapping Maria, and she walked with me to help motivate me and encourage me. So, you know, those 10 consistent laps, I'm, you know, that would be close to 12 and a half K of just consistency throughout the race, because 8 laps would be 10 K. Yeah. So, you know, you know, I'm pretty happy with that consistency. And then, you know, it just became like, you know, taking out the little things that I probably could have done better with the laps that were inconsistent or where I was crashing a bit. You know, I looked back at my aid table and my drinks, and I was like, yeah, I didn't drink enough at this point. I can tell. And that's kind of what was happening with the, like, why I was slowing down. And, you know, you become, it's easy to forget to drink when it's a little cooler if you don't need it as much, you're not sweating as much. And then it's also, for me at least, I tend to sometimes take in my aid when I get very lasered focused on just catching people. And so there were a lot of people for me that just kind of look ahead to and keep catching or laughing or anything like that. And so I think there was probably a few times where I should have drank a little bit more, taken my aid a little more often. But yeah, I look back at my slips and there was some great consistency in there and a lot to learn from that even.
Well, so when you're in that zone, I mean, for, like I said, at least 10 consecutive laps, and they were spot on. Is your mind even thinking about that, or does your body just take over and just know I can't think of another word except for the word body feel, that you can feel it in your body that I'm exactly on the right pace and you don't even think about it. How does that work for you?
I think I knew. I was always taking my laps and I was always kind of keeping an idea because I was kind of set points being like, you're not going to go slower than this, but I don't want to go faster than this yet because we're only at this point in the race. You know, you don't want to overdo yourself now. You don't want to, you know, overload yourself now. So I definitely was paying attention probably more this race than I have other races. Some races, though, I've definitely been like just in a zone. I'll click my watch. I won't really even register the time. I'll just be telling myself to keep pushing and going, and it's led to a good result. So I would think parts of this race was kind of like that in a way, where I was just kind of pushing and clicking, and I've kind of just looked to make sure that the watch clicked so that it was keeping track of my laps pretty accurately, as well as just my timing per lap. But mostly, you know, I was focused on just being as consistent and patient as I could with the race.
Well, you were, and you're right. You know, despite maybe having a little bit of a crash at the end, I would not describe it as a crash, but because you were still pretty fast in those last few laps, coming into that final half a lap, did you know that you were set to break the record?
Yeah. So they announced going into the last 5K. That I was 90 seconds under the record, and I could tell I was so fatiguing. I was dying. I was like, here's the lactic acid in my legs. This is not going to be pretty. I know I'm going to slow down, but I have to fight through it. And of course I did slow down, and I was slowing down to the point that it was cutting it close that I wasn't going to get the record. And so I really had to push myself there to get it by I think I got it by 22 seconds. I really had to dig deep for that. And so, you know, those are the moments to be proud of that. Like, you know, I could have just let it, you know, I was sitting comfortably in first, but I could have just kind of let it go and not fought for that. But I fought the best I could for it. And that's also why, you know, it's so incredible to me that Katie Burnett walked within a 50K. Because it's like I said, I was fatiguing so much there and I'd only done 35. Or I was only about to do 35. And after that point, Katie Burnett continued another 15K. You know, so it's pretty incredible what she had walked. And so, and, you know, and I look at this, you know, record and it's a great feeling, but I also remind myself, like, records are meant to be broken. We have phenomenal women out there like Stephanie Casey, like Robin Stevens, that this record could easily be theirs, you know, so it's still there to be taken.
Well, before we leave Katie Burnett, she, at that particular race, it was at the World Championships in London. She set the 50-kilometer American record at 4:21 en route from that 35K record that she set. So she had a great race in London, and kudos to you for giving her her due for setting the record that she did. And then, like you said, going on for another 15 kilometers. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Phenomenal.
So once Robin dropped out and then you saw that you were in first place, what does that do to someone like you who's an elite athlete in your mind? What are you thinking at that point? Does the pressure increase that, oh, I got to, you know, really be on top of my game now that I've taken over the lead? Or what goes through your mind?
So the way the race worked out is I had caught Robin and moved into first, and then she dropped out a little bit after that. I'm not really sure when she dropped out. I'm not sure how much longer after that she dropped out by, but honestly, once I just got into first place in general, I just wanted to make sure, my goal was to just keep building a gap between me and whoever was in second. It didn't matter who was in second, whether it was myself, Maria, Stephanie, Casey, you know, like, it was just, I needed to build a gap between whoever was next behind me, you know? And so that was, like, just the whole goal was make a big enough gap that it's going to be hard to catch you. And so that was just kind of, and then the way I was able to do that was just to keep looking at the people I was lapping. So anybody I was coming up behind, I just kept gunning for them and being patient and going after them and going around them and then picking off the next person. So I feel like that's the cross country in me that comes out, just running cross country all those years from high school and college. You're always just kind of like in a pack, just kind of like picking off the next person in front of you and trying to catch the next person. So I think, like, you know, I just have that kind of focus from those early years.
Well, Stephanie had a great race, and she was relatively close to you. I mean, on the way the course is set up, were you able to keep an eye on her and whether she was falling back or keeping the same pace?
Yeah, I was noticing her progression, and I was definitely noticing her pacing and stuff. And so, you know, it was enough where I had, like, maybe two or three laps to go, and I kind of was like, okay, I think I'm sitting comfortably enough that she won't be able to catch me, but I still have to move because she is closing in on me. So I still have to, I can't give up. Like, I still have to push. So that was definitely some motivation there too, as well. I mean, again, she did so well, and I hope that, like, you know, just her, my race performance isn't overshadowing hers because she just did such a great job and she improved, you know, and she really did. She negative split almost like the whole way. And I think that's such a success, and I'm excited to see what else she's going to do.
Well, she has a similar story to yours. I mean, you know, Stephanie, she's been around forever too. She started out as a junior athlete, and actually I spoke with her the other day, and so she's been at the sport for a long time. The interesting thing that you said is that you're 32, and she's 30. I believe she told me she was 37, and Robin's 38. You're the youngster. you're the youngster.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say I'm the youngster, but it is funny how it's, like, you know, how it's kind of working out. And I mean, we've definitely seen research over the years that women in distance events peak later, you know, kind of towards their mid-30s, towards the end of their 30s. You know, we're seeing a lot of research showing that. So if that's any evidence, hopefully I'll keep improving that I'm hitting a good stride then for these longer events.
Well, that's interesting because, you know, that just means you have a lot more of a career to go. So what are your future goals?
I really am just taking it one year at a time right now. So really the goal here at this moment is to get to Eugene and compete in Eugene this summer. And after that, you know, it gets to be bonus. You know, and a lot of it depends on what they do decide to do for the Olympics. Are they going to add the 35 or not? I think if you had asked a younger 20-year-old Miranda or a, you know, even mid-20s Miranda, if she'd still be race walking at 32, she probably would have said no. I think, like, I definitely didn't foresee me already being in it this long, but here I am, and what a gift. You know, what a gift in this life that I can do that and have had the ability to do that. And, you know, who knows where else it's going to take me. I think something that, you know, some of us have joked about but really are semi-serious about is that we would like to get our level one coaching certifications and come back and be, you know, team staff on some of these race walk trips and still be a part of it and still be encouraging because since we have such experience at these higher level meets and on all these teams, it would be great to come back and help a younger generation as they kind of venture into these things and give them our expertise and help guide them in whatever way we can and still be a part of Team USA and cheer and be excited, you know. I think that's definitely, once I've finished this part of my life or finished this part of my career, that's something I would look forward to trying to do.
That is an absolutely great idea. I love it. If you guys did that, I think that would be a wonderful, wonderful thing. Because normally when you're sent on these international trips, they don't have a racewalk person there. It's a administrative person from USATF. So I think that would definitely help if you guys did that.
Yeah, it would definitely be a road, you know. I'm sure you know already, like, you have to go through all the USATF coaching levels and things like that. It's definitely, you got to get a certain amount of hours in and things like that. But it'd definitely be a path that I'm very interested in, and I would like to try, even if I only could do, you know, Can-Am Cup for race walking, even if I only got to that step, it'd be a joy to come back and do those things and work with the next generation.
So which would you prefer, the 20K or the 35K?
That's a tough question. That really is. It's a tough question because I've only raced 135. It wasn't that bad. I can't, you know, I've raced a lot of 20s, and sometimes when you're hurting in a 20 and you want it to be over, you know, and to think, well, what if I was hurting in a 35 and I wanted it to be over? I think I just have a mutual kind of love and respect for both of them right now. I don't know if one outranks the other. I think, like, they're just different. I mean, it's close to double the distance, you know. So I guess I like the 35 a bit more just because I'm a little more on a high of it. But I think they're pretty even in my mind.
Well, this has been a great conversation to have with you, and like I said, for people who don't know you and didn't know your story, for them to hear, and then also to hear about Sunday's race and your plans for the future and just where you're at right now.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed speaking with you, and, you know, this has been great. Thank you so much, Chris.
Well, you're more than welcome. We've been friends for a long time, you know, and I also wanted to, when I was thinking about doing the podcast with you, I wanted to give a shout out to your mom. Your mom has always been great with me, and she's been great with everybody. She is such a wonderful lady, and she's just so friendly, and she's just wonderful.
Oh, thank you. I really think she's going to appreciate it. I'm going to let her know that you said all these really kind things about her. She is pretty awesome. For anybody who doesn't know, yeah, my parents are pretty awesome and come to almost every meet, every domestic meet at least. And my dad usually does my aid, and they're incredibly supportive. I'm very fortunate to have them, and I have a lot of love in my heart for them, even though I'm still their daughter and I get annoyed sometimes. But yeah, my parents have been, they're as much a part of this than anything else, you know, in my life.
Well, I love her to death, and she's been, like I said, she's been wonderful with me through the years, and I consider her a really good friend.
Thank you. That's really, really lovely of you to say. Thank you so much.
You're more than welcome. Well, thank you, Miranda, for being on the show today, and we wish you the best of luck in all of your endeavors and your training, as well as your upcoming season. Are you going to do any indoor races, or are you just going to stick with longer stuff?
No, you can catch me at Milrose Games next weekend.
Oh my gosh, how are you going to do that? By the way, I meant to ask you that. Are you sore from Sunday?
I was the first couple days. I got worked on by Kinetic Performance, and I felt a lot better. Today I did a little bit of speed work just to get my legs under me, and it went pretty well. I was pretty surprised. This is all new territory for me to come off a race like this and try to go fast. So I have no clue what's really going to happen, but I'm excited to try. You know, I'm excited to try and just give it a whirl.
You know, the thing is, I did not know that. I thought you had been doing longer distances. Did you ever do the other national championships, like the 30K or the 40K, those races?
No, they were always on the East Coast and a lot of time in the fall. And they were just, you know, I'd already either done a ton of traveling, or maybe I went home when the season was over to New York. and was already home, and it was just, it's too expensive and too difficult to go back in the fall to do some of those longer ones. Maria did them quite a bit. She did at least a 30K a few times. But yeah, this was the first attempt.
Wow, and you ended up breaking the American record, so congratulations. That's awesome. Well, and here's the other thing that I've noticed in the last few years is that a lot of the national championships have moved over here to the West Coast, and we got to give a lot of credit to Tracy Sundlin for putting on these races, especially the 50Ks, but now he's doing the 35K. But he's been doing it for, I read it was 12 years now. And it takes a lot of work to put on a race. And, you know, you've come to my races out here on the West Coast when we hold the races in Tustin and stuff. It's a lot of work. And a lot of people don't realize how much work it is. But Tracy, because he was putting on, you know, major running races, he has so much experience and so much knowledge. He always puts on a first class event. So we thank you to Tracy.
Oh yeah, thank you to Tracy, and also yeah, thank you to you as well, Chris, who's undertaken, like, you know, putting on some pretty big championships as well. Like, you know, we don't get a lot of bids to host race walking. So when you guys step up to the plate, it is so appreciated. And I know the athletes don't always get a chance to tell you after a race because we're exhausted or we're still processing kind of like what just happened in the moment. But we do really appreciate you guys, I hope you guys always know that it, you know, we'd be lost without you. So thank you very much.
Oh, you guys are more than welcome. That's, you know, we enjoy the sport and we enjoy the event. And, you know, myself, I remember when I was still racing, I always appreciated what the race directors were doing, but I was just as guilty. I didn't always go up to them after the race because you're trying to recover, you know, after, especially because I was a 50K guy. You're just dead, and so you sometimes forget. So I want to thank all the race directors who ever put on races that I ever did, and most of them were back east. Florida in Claremont, I did a bunch of races there, and then of course Elliott with the 40K, all the time. So so I want to give thanks to those guys too. But thank you for mentioning that. But as I said, I think what has happened in the last few years is a lot of these championships have moved over to the West Coast, which is great for you guys who train down there in San Diego. First of all, San Diego is sunny almost all the time, right?
I mean, it's pretty beautiful where you are too, Chris. So, yeah, I mean, we're pretty even.
true that. And then I think about that sometimes, and I think, you know what, let's start a Olympic training center here. And you know, we have the beach still, and we have, you know, just, we have a bunch of trails. Where you guys are at, you have the Strand. Now, I know I'm going off the rails here because I was trying to close out the interview, but don't you guys get tired of training on the Strand all the time?
I mean, the Strand is like 40K long, so you can pick anywhere to start, which is helpful. I think, like, I don't train on it every day. I train on different, like, paths. Like, there's Roar Park over here or Lake Miramar, you know, going around Mission Bay as well, for sure. There's, you know, lots of different little bike paths to hop on. So it's not every day, but I would say I've done a majority of my time on the Strand. And, yes, I do enjoy little breaks from it, but I really think, too, like, when you start from different points, it changes it up a bit. And, honestly, you know, when you're on the Coronado side, especially of that bike path, it's just beautiful to see the skyline. Nick Christie, shout out to him. He always says that it's the best skyline. San Diego's the best skyline there ever was. And, you know, I don't know if I say it's the best one there ever was, but I thoroughly enjoy it. It's very beautiful. You get any view from it is nice. So, I think just having the view and being along the water, you can't really beat it. You know, it's a dream.
No, I agree. I've gone to San Diego for a school events in school. You know, they have us do trainings and stuff like that and put us up in San Diego hotels and stuff. And it is a beautiful skyline. And but to comment on the Strand and doing the same course, when I would do my long ones, like 22-milers or 23-milers, it would always be on this one course that was a river trail. But it was the same thing. It was like a 40-mile river trail that went to the middle of Orange County all the way to the sea. So they call it the Mountain to the Sea Trail, the Mountains to the Sea Trail. But once you got to like Newport Beach and that area, it became so beautiful because then there you're out of the city, you're just on this bike trail, and they don't allow any cars on it, and so it became my favorite trail, and I didn't mind doing it over and over and over and over again. In fact, it became a kind of a training aid, because then I always pretended in my mind, this is the 50K course that you're going to be racing on. And so I would do my visualizations when I was on that course.
Yeah, that's a great point, the visualization. Yeah, sometimes you don't know where you are because you're visualizing. That is such a good point. I forget about that. Yeah, completely true.
Yeah, and you have to do that in order to get ready for the race, and that way you don't have to think about it when you're in the middle of the race. But I knew every inch of that course, and sometimes I even dream about race walking on that course.
That's so funny. It's like definitely ingrained in your mind. That's so funny.
Thank you for letting us know about how you're doing right now and how the training is going and what your future goals are. We really appreciate you being on the show.
Yeah, I appreciate it too. Thank you so much.
Well, that's our show for today, folks. We want to thank Miranda Melville, national champion at the new 35-kilometer distance in an American record time. And we want to wish her the very best in all of her future training and racing adventures. Thank you again for tuning into this podcast. Thank you very much from all of us here at Racewalk Planet Radio.